Welcome to episode 405 of the SciShow Podcast, the last episode of the year, the last episode of the decade. One where we culminate everything in our best albums of 2019 list. You got all the extra stuff last week. There's been apparently some discussion on that. And I'm sure there'll be things for you guys to talk about here, as this was a clusterfuck for us to do.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, we gripe, I'm sure you guys are sick of hearing it, but we gripe every year about doing these lists. But some years are easier than others. And this year was not one of those easy years. And for one half the list, there were some pretty, well, individually, there were some obvious choices for the top. And then like the next, say, 15 was a tie. And that's not to speak ill of any of those albums, but some of them are just so drastically different styles from each other to pick one over the other was just kind of
ugly.
Yeah, you just kind of had to flip a coin and be like, all right, sure, you're better than this one. We could change things if we needed to. And actually, list-wise, we didn't make any obvious tweaks to like, okay, if we switch this one place and switch yours one place, we get this number and blah, blah, blah. But Nick's and mine lists were drastically different, where there's a – we cross over, what, maybe half of them?
Yeah. Yeah, there's more of a disparity between our lists than there usually is.
Yeah. And we had a slight rule – so some of the general rules applied where obviously it had to be released in 2019, and we only did the full-length albums as we covered EPs last week. But because this year we did – half of the album amount of albums we usually do, and we really loved some of our Sideshow ABC picks, we decided that Bandcamp picks like that would be eligible for the end of the year list so long as they were actually released this year. Mm-hmm. For those of you who've been listening long enough, you know, segment bands weren't in the list, despite what year they were released. So that was a bit of a change that played a very significant role in our list.
Extremely, yeah.
And I think it surprised both of us as we actually went through the releases. We're like, oh, shit, look how many there are.
Yeah.
And not just in, like, the bottom half. I'm talking, well, you'll see. Some of these jumped up there. So that's where we're at. We ended up with top 25 this year, which seems humorous considering we reviewed less albums, but mm-hmm. There was that many bands. Actually, there was 26 bands. So that was another rule we broke. There's a tie on this list because there was no way to break this tie without making another tie.
Yeah. It fucked our list entirely if we didn't let this one just be what it was.
Yeah. So there's actually 26 bands on this list. So with that, we'll get into it starting at the bottom. With actually one of a band that ended up on Nick's list and not mine, and that was Horndal with their album Remains. Nick?
I like this album a lot, and I kept going back to it throughout the year. Part of it is the story. We talked about this last episode where we covered the artwork, because it also made my list for that, because this album is a whole package. It is a band based around a theme that is highly personal to their area, to their town. The artwork fits the bill. The lyrical content fits it. The bleakness of the music fits it. But even if you take all of that out of the package, the writing is very dynamic. It's very fun. It goes from kind of more like sludgy, trudgy type stuff to a little bit more punk influenced at times. It just has this really good dynamic range that is always engaging. And I thought it was a lot of fun. I kept coming back to it as the year progressed. So it was the end of my list, but it was still on the list. And the way our numbers worked out, it put it on the year-end list. Which, in case you are new to the episode, to the show and how we do this, Brian and I both make our personal top 20, 25, 20, whatever, 30 lists. And we rank them. So, you know, if it's 25, the album that we give number one gets 25 points and descends accordingly. Right. And then we cross-reference and award numbers from there for a cumulative list. And then we cap it at a certain number and cut off anything below it. So that's how the list is formed. This one just made the cut at number 25.
Right. So actually doing that number game, 24 and the pairs at the bottom from 24, from 20 to the end of the list are actually sets of ties numerically. And we just rank them based on, well, kind of arbitrary pickings or what we both liked more, whatever. So tying for last, but number 24 is tied for number 30 on my list. Tied for number 20 on my list, and that's Sentient Horror with Morbid Realms. I know I gave that one a 4 instead of a 5 this year, this album, but it's still really good, and it grows on me the more I listen to it. It's
spoiler, a whole bunch of albums that got 4s made our year-end list, because we went back and listened to a lot more this year since we did less albums. Things that we were like, 4, but maybe we'll see if this comes up at year-end. A lot of them did.
Well, yeah, I only had... So, I only had 13 albums I gave 5s to.
And I had less, so...
Yeah, and I actually gave no 1s this year. I think we discussed last week, but anyway... So tying in 20 for me with Sentient Horror with Morbid Realms, it's just a really strong death metal album. And while the Swedish style is obviously apparent, it's something they do much better than their peers. And, you know, I feel like a band like Tomb Mold has gotten a lot of press around the blogs that end up on a lot of lists. And I can kind of understand that. But as far as there was a different style of old school, using air quotes, death metal, I feel like Sentient Horror's writing is much better than that. So, and then going on to number 23 is Zoth.
Our first Bandcamp pick.
First Bandcamp pick. Yes, that was obviously our X pick. It's spelled X-O-T-H. With my number 18, the album Interdimensional Invocation. This was one of those bands on my list I kept rotating around in its place, in its numbers. But it's blend of, like, you know, Revocation, Gone to Space, like, super technical kind of thrashy aspect with a little bit of sci-fi. Like, the way they did it is just, for especially considering they're an unsigned band at this point, it's a super impressive album. And some really memorable works on there. And just, I don't know, it was impressive technical feat, which I was actually surprised it didn't end up on your list anywhere.
Yeah, it just didn't make the cut. it was on the playlist for the year end thing, and just the way it shook out, it just didn't quite make that cut. But it was one of like two or three that were on the fringe. But this album was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Like, beyond being extremely technical and impressive and intricate, it had a bounciness to it and like a little bit of levity that you don't normally get from these super intense technical bands. And like immediately off the bat, when we spun it, we're like, oh, this is different. This is fun. Mm-hmm. And it holds that, and it definitely holds your attention throughout. It was a very enjoyable spin. All right. 22. This one made both our lists, I believe.
Yeah.
And that is Sermon with The Birth of the Marvelous. This had that nice 80s vibe that we got between like this and Idle Hands. And while we loved the Idle Hands EP, the album felt like it left a little bit to be desired. Sermon didn't. Sermon filled that perfectly. It walked the balance of hard rock meets metal, meets a little bit on the gothic side of things really well, and delivered it in a package that stood out because we haven't heard anything else like that in a while. Typically, anything that fringes on the gothic side of stuff, I get bored really quick. It feels hokey. It feels super duper cheesy. This does not. This is memorable. This is enjoyable. It's catchy. Mm-hmm. I've gone back to this a whole bunch of times. I like this one a lot.
That was my
on both ours, or did that cover it?
Pretty much. I mean, that was my tie at number 20 with a Sentient Horror. I mean, this was like if they took those elements you were talking about and like listened to a lot of Catatonia and then like wrote this album, and it became something just bigger, like a big, we talked about it a little last week too, I believe. It kind of lived up to the name. It was a big, big production of an album. It's something I almost forgot to go back to, but when I did, I was like, yeah, this is really good.
Yeah. All right, this next one has to be me. This is on my list, kind of getting a little higher up there on my list. This came in at number 15 for me, and this did not make yours at all. That is Destridge with The Chosen One. These guys are weird. And we've reviewed, what, four albums from them now? Three albums from them now?
Yeah, I think so.
And we always are like, damn, these guys are good. But they're sort of a novelty act, generally, and not something that we go back to a whole bunch after we listen to it. It's fun, it's enjoyable, it's a little quirky, it's a little weird, but the writing is impressive, and then we shuffle it aside. This was the album, and we definitely talked about this at the time, that had hooks to it. You know, it still has that weird, quirky delivery, the songs are kind of goofy, but the playing is as top-notch as it always has been, but they deliver memorable hooks and choruses and moments that were earworms for me that I kept going back to throughout the year. And I don't know, this one connected in a way that the previous ones haven't. And I'm definitely going back to it a whole bunch as I've continued to do. So yeah, a weird pick, but it definitely I think is worthy.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I need to try it again. Cause I like almost forgot that album existed.
Yeah, man, just go throw on About That and you'll be like, I get it.
We'll see. I didn't get it the first time around, so.
Fair enough. All right, I kind of have to do the next one too, don't I?
Well, it's on my list too, but go ahead.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I forgot it was on your list. So the next one is Torch, Admission. This one, you know, if it wasn't on our most improved list, this should have been on there. Which I don't have that list in front of me. Maybe I did talk about it last week. I don't really remember. But
I'm on mine.
These guys definitely stepped up a notch. We were not that impressed with the last one. This one, production was better. Songs were better. It didn't feel as self-indulgent. Everything was memorable. It moved along at a good clip. And it kind of threw back to the days of Torch that I really, really enjoyed. And it connected. Like I really enjoy their general sound and vibe. And they missed the mark on the last one. So this felt like a little bit of a reworking, you know, going towards a direction that I like, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, this is something I surprised myself, found myself going back to more. I feel like actually a lot of the stoner stuff I go back to a little more nowadays because my wife likes it for some reason. When last time I played this album in the kitchen, she's like, did we establish already that I like Torch? And I'm like, yes, we did. She's like, okay, good, because I do. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you regret selling me your vinyls yet?
No, not yet.
Good, because you're not getting back.
Mallory might, but we'll get there at a later date. But yeah, this one is, like Nick said, it's just a huge step above where they were, and especially after hearing and seeing, was it Dead Now?
Yeah.
And getting a vibe off that and coming back to Torch, like, okay, this is all in the right spot where everything, how everything should sound.
Yeah,
that was my number 19. And what was my number 17? Again, the bottom of the rotating list was our joint number 19 was Pound with two.
two asterisks.
Two. It's technically dots, I think, on their thing.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Two.
Yeah.
I mean, this. The only reason I think it comes in lower on list for me is the fact that it's instrumental. And we've discussed both of our, I don't know the right word I'm looking for here. The fact that we don't go back to instrumentals as much as we should, because we like vocals, but the writing and playing just from the two guys in Pound is unreal. Really. It's just, the songs are absolutely crazy. The noises they manage to make, the crazy patterns and time signatures and stuff is just really phenomenal. And a band that's, They're coming around. I mean, they're two albums in, and following them on social media, they're definitely picking up steam, and I would love to see them just really explode in 2020 or 2021. They absolutely deserve it.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to see them come through the area. That'd be a fun, fun concert.
Absolutely.
It might be a little bit intense, but it would be enjoyable. This was a great release. It's one that kept moving around on my list. I couldn't quite figure out where to put it, and I think it was the instrumental thing that makes it end up being a little bit lower.
Yeah,
because that's always hard to crack my top 10. I don't know that I've done that. It's not something I go back to all that frequently. But that is the only instrumental that made the list this year, and with very good reasons. It's extremely impressive. Next up is the one I can't explain. We talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago. We're going to talk about it again. That's Gatecreeper with Deserted. It's our number 18. It only made my list, not surprisingly. There is just something about this album that is so catchy and groove-laden for being a Swedish death metal album. I don't know what it is, but it works for me like no other version of this has. I can't explain it beyond that, but I have gone back to it a whole bunch. I continue to enjoy it, and I don't really have much more to say about it than that. Because I can't explain it. I couldn't explain it when we reviewed it. I couldn't explain it when we talked about it for being most improved. And I can't explain it now. It connects in a way most others don't.
And it's funny because they're from like Philadelphia. Yeah, just like Sentient Horrors from Jersey. Like,
yeah. I don't know. I can't explain it any further than that. But I thoroughly enjoy it. So I'm just going to move along. Number 17, we have Employed to Serve with Eternal Forward Motion. This one, I think, was only on mine. Yeah, this came at number 11 for me. This album is so fucking unrelentingly heavy. If you did not go back and spin it recently, I highly recommend you go do that. This album just grinds you down. It's unrelenting. And I don't know, it kind of tickled that same vein that you get from something like Polar, but maybe not the Polar album that we're going to talk about in a little bit. Of just having this thick, heavy, deep production and bludgeoning riffs. And it's not something that we are always in the mood for or go back to a whole bunch, but when we are, this band fills that bill this year more so than I think most others possibly could have. There's just this level of thickness to it that you don't really get anywhere else. And I don't know. It worked. It connected with me very, very well.
Yeah, I do need to go back and listen to it more. But for some reason, it didn't stick with me, unlike another band we'll be talking about that I feel is in a similar vein. But so the number 16, I believe, was only on my list, which was up at number 9. And that is Shadow of Intense Melancholy. And that was our S pick for Sideshow ABCs. It still continues to impress me. Like, it's, I guess technical and symphonic deathcore, but like, it's light on the deathcore part, and it's heavy, just period, but heavy on the technical, and it brings in, the symphonics come in a, like, black metal-y way, a la Dimmu Borgir, and just the way everything blends together, and the writing is just super impressive, and just really grabbed me out of left field, especially considering something I heard about from somebody else's Instagram post. Like, it's one I continue to go back to, probably like as Nick does with Employed to Serve, I do with Shadow of Intent.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to keep going here. So this is our, third, that was the second Sideshow ABCs. This is our third one with Meyer Planer, A Mountain of Sayola Hooves. This was an intense album.
Yes.
I don't remember where we stumbled across it. I think I saw it on one of the other blogs or something, and we decided to check it out. But it's dark, it's heavy, it's, I don't know, there's just something like really visceral about this album that it's hard to kind of put into words. I feel like we struggled with it a little bit when we talked about it before, and we just left it with, you need to go spin this as an album and see how it sits with you, because that's kind of the vibe that you get from it. It's just an intense journey, but it's really, really well-crafted and something that anytime I revisit, I'm just like, damn, that is really good.
That's
kind of all I have for that.
I went back to that one too when I was picking my list, and it's like, I agree with everything you said, but that is one of those ones you have to be in like the mood for. It's
for sure
really intense. Number 14 was on my list and rather high up, and inexplicably. So, side note for me, like my 6 through 10 picks was like a 5-way tie. Like, I rotated these bands, these albums so much on my list, I just eventually had to stop doing it and be like, all right, that's it, I'm done. And that's After the Burial's Evergreen. We've been following this band a long, long time, predating the show. And they keep getting better, in my opinion, with every album. And this one finally, to me, hit a culmination of everything they've been playing with beforehand and came in with something super aggressive and memorable, and again, playing on all their strong suits. And it's, I don't know, for some reason this just stuck with me. It grabbed me, and I kept going back to this album throughout the year. And it's so well done. And I, for a band that seemed like they should have broken up a couple albums ago based on everything that has happened with the members and such, the fact that they came back two albums later, put this out, was just a really impressive feat that I loved. And yeah, didn't make your list at all, I'm sure.
No, but no, it didn't. I mean, it was really good, but it didn't end up on the list.
Yeah. So the next, is this one, the next 13 only on my list too? No,
No, it's on mine. It's just right at the bottom of mine.
Okay, yeah.
So I figured you'd be a little more apt to talk about
it. Yeah, so number 13 is Of Modern Architecture, and they're all Matricide. That was my number 10.
Yeah, it was my number 19.
In the similar reasons Nick goes back to Employed to Serve, I go back to this Of Modern Architecture album. It's just angry and wants to be angry, and there's... it harks back to the OG metalcore days, with just really great riffs, visceral vocals, and breakdowns that, like grandma used to make. Like, they're just like a song like Miscarriage just gets me every fucking time. And, but there's pieces of that throughout the album. It's, and you know, we found this band doing, did we actually review Wilderness, or was that another Bandcamp find? I don't even remember. But we found them then and been keeping an eye on them, waiting for more music to come out. Okay. And what they came out with was just a huge step up from Wilderness and just tightened everything, and really enjoyable album.
Yeah, it was. I mean, and that's why it's on my list. Yeah. It was a very enjoyable album. It's funny, like, this got a 5 from me. Employed to Serve got a 4. And as you said, they do fill very similar roles, but when going back and, like, listening to my year-end playlist and putting these on shuffle or whatever else, there was just something about Employed to Serve that connected more than this one did, and it ended up superseding it in the end, which was kind of not what I expected, but just based on, you know, the last 2 weeks that we've had to, like, really just dig in and listen to these albums on repeat again and again and again, finally, which is something we didn't really get to do a whole bunch throughout the year, I found it shifting a little lower in my list, and
Of Modern Architecture?
No, I found
Employed to Serve.
Employed to Serve moving higher. Man, I just lost it entirely. Okay.
So I guess I got to keep going here.
You got to keep going, apparently.
Yeah, so this is the 4th out of the 6 through 10 slot. Is Soilworks, Verkleiten. It's my number 7. And it even surprised me how high it ended up. This came out early in the year. So I've had time with it. But it's when I found myself going back to just willingly, as opposed to, oh, I need to check this out again. There's some songs in particular in there I go back to even outside of the full album. It's different for them. It definitely takes a step toward the Night Flight Orchestra stylings. Though, side note, if you want some good 80s rock, check out Night Flight Orchestra.
Okay.
The whoever it was on Metal Sucks saying they were kind of one and the same was quite hyperbolic. But one is definitely influencing the other now. But they weren't going to be able to top the Ride Majestic, or it'd be very hard to. And instead of trying to, it seems they sidestepped and put out just something a little different sounding. And I can respect that and be like, all right, this is a different type of soil work. If I want more OG soil work, I'll go to that. So it was fun and different, and I kept going back to it. It was a good time.
Yeah. I did not. This one did not connect with me for those exact reasons. but That's fine. That's why it's a cumulative list here. Making both our lists, I believe, is Polar with their album Nova. These guys deliver every time. I would be hard-pressed to pick a favorite of the ones we've reviewed. We've now covered three of their four albums, and we've given all of them fives. And there is definitely a little bit of change and growth in all of them. This one felt like a mix of No Cure, No Savior and Shadowed by Vultures. Mm-hmm. It has the breakdowns and groove of Shadowed by Vultures with a little bit more of the sing-songy big chorus thing that they had going on with No Cure, No Savior. And it really split the uprights there. And it's very enjoyable. Like, one listen in, you already know the choruses. You know the hooks. The breakdowns are all predictable in that way that you want from a band like this, right, where you can see them coming a mile away, but the payoff is always there and always worth it. And it's just a solid album. It's like a good, fun, easy album to throw on and go back to whenever you kind of need some pump-up jams. This hit probably better than anything else that we covered this year.
Yeah, I agree. That was my number 14. And my number 15 was our number 10, cracking the top 10 here.
Hey, top 10.
Worm Witch, Heaven That Dwells Within. I mean, we both... What number was this on yours? You had this higher than I believe.
I think I did have it higher than you. Worm Witch came in for me at number 9.
Yeah, so good, 6 spots higher. I mean, we talk about them a lot. We love Worm Witch. I mean, they haven't disappointed us yet. This album was a little lower for me, as I didn't find myself going back to it quite as much as the previous album, but their blend of black death metal punk, like, is just something different, a little bit fun, though it shouldn't be, but keeping that bleakness that the style deserves as well.
Yeah, it's funny. When we first covered this, like, we both gave it fives, but I think we both said at the time, this is not Strike Mortal Soil. It's not quite as, like, fun is the word. It really is. And what made Strike Mortal Soil so interesting was that it was so out of left field. Like, there was no hype about the album. There was no press about it before it came out. But then reading interviews with the band and whatnot, they got picked up off of doing an EP, I think. I might be getting my details wrong because we're going back like 4 years now. But they didn't have an album written before they were in the studio recording it. So they were making shit up on the spot and being like, yeah, sure, why not? And that's where you got like a little bit of, you know, weird punk influence on one song or some black and roll going on here or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it still had these like really cohesive, tight transitions. And all of that remains true on Heaven That Dwells Within. The difference is we now have the context of the previous album. Right. So it's not as unpredictable.
Right.
So like if I had to pick one of the two, I would still probably say their first one is more enjoyable, only because you didn't see it coming and it hit harder because of that. But going back and really listening to Heaven That Dwells Within a whole bunch now, it has all those same crazy transitions. It still makes no sense the way their previous album makes no sense, but it works really, really well and is unlike, you know, we've just mentioned like 10 genres that this dabbles within. And it does in a really cohesive way that I don't really know of any other bands that manage to do it quite as smoothly and also as weirdly as Worm Witch. And it's extremely enjoyable to go back to, which is why I ended up making my number
9,
mm-hmm. I think. Yeah. It's super duper good.
So speaking of number 9, this album was my number 1 for the year, which is Misery Index, Rituals of Power. It didn't hit next list at all. So I ended up on that spot solely from my number 1. I mean, this shouldn't surprise too many of you. I kind of love this band. And as I mentioned last week, as talking about them as most improved, this is everything I wanted from this band ever. And it's, I find every, yeah, there's a little bit of cheese in a couple of songs at the end. But this album is everything I'd want from the band. It's catchy. It's brutally heavy. They found a balance of making sick breakdowns and grind parts and death metal elements without obvious transitions like you heard on the last album. And it's memorable. Every song is way more memorable and I'll say catchy in some parts, that you just haven't heard from the band before. And they finally found production that fucking works. And it's always been a sticking point for me, even with my previous favorite, Heirs of Thievery. It takes a song or two to get used to the production, and this one finally nails just an absolutely aggressive production. I easily go back to this album more than anything else on my list.
Yeah, this band continues to just not connect with me. I don't know what it is about them, because I like the elements, but there's just something about them that is never memorable. And I'm never like, oh, I'm in the mood for this today. I don't know. Someday it'll connect. Maybe like 3 years from now, I'll be like, dude, I missed out on their entire discography. Who knows? It surely wouldn't be the first time I've done that. But to this day, there's something about that band that just does not jive with me. Okay, moving right along. We're at number 8. This is our fourth ABC pick we have here. And this came in at number 3 on my year-end list. Speaking of unexpected.
Yeah, still boggling my mind.
Yeah, where was it on yours? It was on yours.
Yeah, it was at 16.
Okay. That is Opacia with On Blackest Wings. This was our O pick for the ABCs. This album hit me the way that Chrysian's The Great Execution hit me back in 2011, of being like, oh, here's groove delivered so hard that I can't not listen to it. The album sound absolutely nothing alike, but it, like, that album opened my eyes to, like, groove is my thing, and it was just delivered through, you know, a death metal angle on that one. This is more just, like, straightforward riffs to slam your head to, and I don't know, like, it just kind of tickled me, and I keep going back to it. Every aspect of this is fun, and it, I don't know, it just, it connected with me and worked on a level that obviously most other ones didn't this year. It was just super duper fun. And I did not see that coming. I would not have guessed that this would be here. I didn't think I'd be talking about it as my number 3 pick of the year. But I knew it was going to be like within the top 10 on my list when we first covered it, once we decided that we were going to allow the ABC picks on here. And then listening to it over the last couple of weeks, every time one of these songs came on, I was just like, shit, yes, this, I want more of this. And it worked so well that it ended up getting that high on my list. I don't know. It's hard to defend, but I really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great album. I feel like it could have been a smidge shorter, but the playing on it is just phenomenal. I mean, aside from the groove, the solos and the riffs are just like almost unparalleled in their style and amongst their peers. And again, it's another band that should be bursting out the scene soon, I hope, because they absolutely deserve it. At least be opening tours with like Revocation and Ex Mortis and the ilk.
Yeah, it's like, it's the balance of the thrashiness mixed with then just like the heft of the weight of things that like, and that's kind of the reference to Chrysian in there was like, oh, this is death metal, a genre I don't generally care that much about. Give me groove to it and I'll remember it. This is like mostly, I would say, rooted in thrash with the pacing and the quickness and the delivery and the guitar acrobatics and whatnot, that it fits that kind of vibe, but it delivered another level of something that you don't normally get from that genre that kind of made me pay more attention to everything else that was going on. And I don't know, it worked super duper well for me. I guess I should do the next one, huh?
Yeah, probably.
I'm a little surprised this ended up being on your list as well, and as high as it was. So cool. I'm slowly breaking you down. If I continue to make you review this band more and more, it'll get there. This is number 5 for me, and it ends up being our number 7 pick, and that is Hia's Legend with White Bat. I love this band. I gush about them every time we review them and talk about them. I will say, since we have started doing this podcast, this is easily their best album. The last couple albums I liked, but I would consider them missteps in their catalog compared to the album that came out right before we started doing the show and where they are now. The two in the middle that I still really like feel weak in comparison. This is catchier. It's bigger hooks. It's heavier riffs. It's better playing. It delivers on a level that the other ones haven't and that the band hasn't in over a decade. It's super duper good. There's not a single song on here I don't love and go back to frequently.
Yeah, this ended up higher than I thought it would too. You can inadvertently thank Mallory for that in part because I felt like that was something I could play around her easily. I don't think she liked it quite as much as I did, but that's the thing. Repeat listens, I liked it more and more. And it's easily the best thing they've done since we started doing the show. And it's a really strong, hard, like southern-tinged hard rock album with some really twisted, dark lyrics if you're paying attention. But there's a good diversity on the album, and the writing is a little more aggressive. Like the other the last two, I was just like, especially Heavy Fruit, I think. I was just like, meh. Like,
yeah, Heavy Fruit, I do not go back to now. Like, I was excited about it at the time because the band was done and broken up, and I never thought we were going to get anything from them again. So when we got an album, like, that review, that placement on my year-end list, everything about that was hype-based.
Right.
And now going back to it with context and with some separation, it's like, eh, it's okay. There's a couple songs on there that I like, but I don't go back.
Well, so I also feel like this album is what you've been trying to describe to me the last few years. Like, when you keep saying I should like He's Legend, like, this is what I'm expecting to hear, and now I finally got it. And I know they're older stuff, there's a little bit more metalcore aspect to it, and they get a little weird or whatever, but this sounds like what He's Legend should be, and they finally became.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a really enjoyable album. And actually on my list, beat out our number six by one spot. And again, that was a hard toss up.
Yeah.
That is Gamora, their self-titled album. They were our letter G for Sideshow ABCs. And after we did that, they actually ended up signed to Willow Tip Records. And that album was re-released through them. But this was just some intense, I guess, technical death metal, but like it wasn't tech death like you're used to. It was just something super aggressive with an almost industrial production on especially the guitar sound just gave it this extreme feel to it. It's intense, but every song is super short and nothing overstays its welcome, which is makes it a lot easier to listen to than you would expect just from a, you know, sampling a track or something.
Yeah. I mean, this ended up at number four on my list. Again, two albums in my top five were Bandcamp picks. There's nothing else that sounds like this band. I'm going to say that again a few times between now and the end of this. But I didn't, there's no way you could have seen this coming. This fits like the heavier, faster, thrashier version of what Meyer Planner delivers, of just this album that is hard to describe, hard to pick a single song from, just delivers this level of intensity that is hard to sum up. You know, it's just over the top playing volume. Everything about it is just maxed. And you know, it's a short, you know, like 27 minute album. It, as you said, does not overstay its welcome at all, but it kind of hits that filling the power violence void that our year end list has here, where we don't have any of that in here. This kind of fills that bill while not sounding anything like a power violence band. It has this level of intensity and harshness and quickness that is akin to that while sounding way more industrial and way more like tech death. Mm-hmm. And it's a weird balance that I don't really know that we've come across otherwise. Yeah. And it's sort of like it's its own genre defining thing. And I don't know. I really enjoyed that. Even if it's not something I can listen to on a daily basis, it's super duper intense and very, very good.
Yeah, I agree. And actually the comparison to a faster Meyer Planner is really, really good. Well done there.
Well, thanks.
All right, so this takes us to our six bands in the top five.
Yeah, that's how we do.
That's how we do this year. So next year, there'll be a different set of rules.
Yeah, we make it up. Whatever. It's our show.
I'll let you take this.
Okay, I'll start. So coming in at, where was it on mine? I don't even know. On mine, it was number two. Yeah, it was way up there. This should not be a surprise to anybody. That would be Norma Jean's All Hail. I love this band. They are kind of one of those, well, they have become, I should not say they always have been. They have become one of those bands, like He Is Legend, that when they put out an album, I pretty much know it's going to be in my top five. I know it's going to be a year-end contender. All Hail does not disappoint. It's very catchy. It's very more breakdown laden than I'd say they have been recently. Like, the songwriting is a little less mathy, a little more simple. And I kind of like that trade-off where you get this bigger production, these bigger breakdowns, these harder payoffs, kind of coupled with some of the biggest, cleanest stuff we've seen them do, maybe ever from them, but definitely since, you know, Meridional era, which is continuing to be my favorite Norma Jean album. This sort of has what I loved about that album and couples it with some of the heavier breakdowns that we've seen from their more recent outputs. You know, it's a band that I always enjoy. I can pretty much at this stage of their writing guarantee I'm going to find something I like about it when it comes out. They haven't disappointed me in like four or five albums. Their earlier catalog is still something I don't go back to very often. But it just, I can pretty much guarantee I'm going to like what they do at this point. And I did. All Hail really, really works. I like the flow of the album. It all just, it connected. It really worked this time. And it ended up number two on my list. And as a tie for number five on both of ours, because I believe where this ended up on your list was exactly opposite where the next one that I'm going to let you spearhead ended up on mine.
Yeah.
But before I let you get into yours, since we have cracked our top 5/6 albums, we're going to do that thing where we play a song for you from each of our top albums of the year. So with that, we're going to play Trace Levels of Dystopia from Norma Jean's All Hail.
Make me a better
the Norma Jean's All Hail was my number 13 with Nick's number 2. And the reason it was tied with this next album is because it was my number 2 and Nick's number 13. And that is Cattle Decapitation's Death Atlas. In theory, this would end up tied with another album on my list. But because on our individual list, if I did that, it would have really screwed things up. I edged it to number 2. This... it wasn't as immediately striking as we discussed as the last two, but it really is a culmination of their things. And if you take out even, well, for me, I don't have to, but if you were to take out the interstitial stuff, you got a really solid album there that has all the groove and crazy writing and vocals and just everything we've come to love from Cattle Decapitation rolled into something that maybe he's not pushing themselves too hard, but at the same time, it's letting them show off everything that we want from them. They didn't need to go next level yet. The next album, they can't just make Death Atlas Part 2. That would be a huge misstep. Right. But showing like, all right, we did Monolith, we did Anthropocene Extinction, here's both in one, so to speak. We'll do something a little different next time. I think it's kind of what they needed at this point, for just for their career, let alone for us as a listener. It lets us sit back and enjoy them as a band. And it's also not that they're ever, you know, bright and cheery, but I think is arguably a bleaker album than even the last year. And it's a lot of it's from its relevancy, which they perhaps too much drive home with their little interstitial tracks, but it really hits hard.
Yeah, it was very solid. I ended up giving it a 4 when we covered it, but I knew that I was being a little harsh on it, maybe. Or maybe now I'm being not as harsh as I was. But like throwing it on and listening to it more, it has extremely memorable moments. I would still argue that it stripped out some of the more interesting dynamic playing and riffage to substitute it with more just aggressive, fast blast beats to give way to big, clean vocals, which I thought worked really well as like added flavor and standout moments on Anthropocene, and was kind of a little bit more of a crutch on this one. And like, I love his clean voice, and I love that there's something catchy and memorable about what they're doing with that. You know, I always say I wish Tech Death had more clean vocals, and I finally got an album that has that in almost every single song, and now I'm tearing it apart, which seems kind of like bullshit on my part. And I realized that because I do thoroughly enjoy it. The problem for me was they removed some of the riffage and writing in order to make that change. But it is extremely memorable. As you said, it is extremely relevant. Yeah. And the songwriting, while maybe a little less engaging musically, does still connect and register and have a little bit more immediate catchiness and kind of gratification and payoff based on the vocal delivery. And I mean, his vocals are always incredible, but I think this one probably stepped up his vocal performance equally on par with what maybe might have been removed in the guitar section.
That makes sense. So, with that, check out the song Vulturous from Cattle Decapitation's Death Atlas, our tie for number 5 in our year-end list. All right, so that was some Cattle to Cap for you. So coming in at number four on our list, and number four on my personal list, is Carbomb's Mordial. We've loved this band for a while now. We kind of missed them when they were first around on Relapse, but when they came back not on Relapse, we're like, hey, check out Carbomb. And it's funny because they've put out their best stuff and continue just getting better and tighter. And I think that's Mordial has sat with me even better than W's. No, Meta.
Yeah.
But Meta. W's as well. But
W's as well.
I meant Meta because the songwriting is just – it's a little tighter and the pacing of the album is more straightforward. I can't say their writing's more straightforward because that would be wrong. But they're – somehow the pacing of the album just works better for me and makes it something a lot easier for me to go back to. And it just slams in the right spots. I mean, the Matthew writing is – all over the fucking place, but when they hit a groove or hit a breakdown, it's always at just the time you need it, and just it's so fucking good and heavy, just so heavy.
Yeah, this has been a band that I've enjoyed taking the journey with because we did not really know what we were in for when we got W's. Who knows? The album is as difficult as Pound's discography is. But, you know, that was like this Dillinger convergy sort of absolute ridiculous math explosion that we weren't really ready for. And, well, I think we all gave that, I think that's back in Kyle days, we all gave it buys back then just due to its sheer level of impressive playing. It is not one that I really ever went back to that much. And I've just kind of enjoyed sticking on this journey with them as they have really never changed their sound that much. They just managed to refine it in a way and increase their production in a way that you get what feels like huge growth between albums. But if you go back, like, you know, I remember kind of talking at length when we first did Mordial that there were a lot more cleans and it was a lot more memorable and easier to digest. But if you go back and listen two albums ago, that's there. It's just buried in the production a little bit more and it doesn't hit quite as hard. And the balance and flow between things isn't quite there, but the core writing, the core concept is all still there two albums ago. It just is delivered a little bit more flawlessly and a little bit more seamlessly as their albums have progressed. You know, there's no huge changes. It's just small tweaks on a really, really solid formula. And the only thing to say about their discography is it just gets a little bit more refined and a little bit tighter and a little bit better sounding with each release. And Mordial does exactly that. It just stepped everything that we already love about a really solid band up one notch further. You know, they just managed to keep upping themselves a little bit in small incremental steps without reinventing the formula and delivering something that we, at this point, know full well we're going to love, we're going to give fives, and we're going to be talking about the year end. And they did it again.
Yeah, and so, fun fact, we did review that with Kyle back in episode 59.
Jesus Christ.
Where we had started doing numbers. So I was a four and you and Kyle were fives. That was also the episode we reviewed Koino Yokan, just to give you context of when that was. Okay. And a week before we reviewed August Burns Red, Sled and Hill. Or two Sweet. Weeks, apparently. But at any rate, so Carbomb killed it again. So check out the song Blackened Battery off their album Mordial.
right, moving right along to number three. We have one that came out of left field this year. Band that this was their debut. We were not familiar with them at all. I don't remember if we picked it up due to cool album artwork or saw it on a blog or got it as promo, but that album is Flub, their self-titled debut. And we talked about this in the album art episode last week of it just being this like weird, trippy, neon colored dreamscape that was engaging right off the bat. And listening to it, you get that. This is fun tech death, a little bit on the progressive side. And the delivery of it is kind of unlike anything else within the genre, which I feel like I've said a few times and it feels like a cop out, but it continues to be true. Yeah. The song we're going to play for you, within the first minute and a half, changes their genre so drastically that it sets the precedent for what you can expect from the rest of the album. And it really gives you an indication a minute and a half in of like, either you're in for a ride and you're going to really enjoy this, or this will not be for you. Thankfully, it was for both of us. We like something that is a little bit more willing to take a hard move, especially if we don't know what we're in for ahead of time and it's not a huge departure from an established band that we know and love, to just be like, oh wait, this is really adventurous, and they're willing to try a whole bunch of genres and bring, again, a little bit of some levity, something different to a very established sound. It makes it interesting. It makes it something that you want to seek out and go back and listen to. And this is a short album. It's less than half an hour long. It's like borderline EP length. But it delivers a very interesting, unique sound without ever overstaying its welcome, which is something that, you know, pays in dividends for you and me. I don't know. It worked. It was really interesting. I went back to it a shit ton, and it's great.
Yeah, this is – so to answer your question as to how we found them, I believe it was promo, and then we did like the album art, but there's also the pedigree of this band with the vocalist from Alter Beast, a guitarist that used to be in Vel Panath, and the drummer from Rivers of Nile. And you throw that together and you get, I guess, a little bit of influence from all their bands, but it is overall something completely new. And while they've been around a while, this is their first full length. I don't know if we acknowledged that last... Yes, we did. I did, at least.
Yeah, they're in my debut.
Yeah, this was my number six pick for all the reasons Nick said. I mean, this is just... This does progressive and technical death metal the way I want to, where it's light on the progressive and really in a lot of keyboard and atmospheric elements, mostly. But and the tech death is there, but there's also some more simple grooves. And lets you get into it easier without overwhelming you with one thing or the other. It strikes a balance. Yeah. And those keyboards and stuff like that add the atmosphere, and some of their bouncy writing really couples with the artwork and gives you something a little more fun and different than what we hear from either the bands they are or were in and just some of the rest of their peers.
Yeah. All right. So with that, we're going to play the opener off the album Last Breath for you from Flub. Check it out. Yeah.
All right, so that cracked our top three, which, for those of you who know how to count, which means we got two left. And this one took us by surprise in a number of ways. And I'm sure some people who listen to the show regularly are going to have comments about this. That's you, Bob. Spirit Adrift, Divided by Darkness, out on 20 bucks bin, came in at number two. And it was my number five.
It was my number six. And
it's interesting because we only reviewed this like 2 weeks ago, and it still ended up that high on our list. Part of it is predicting how much we've listened to it now and predicting how much we're going to listen to it in the future. Part of it is just the sheer awesomeness of the album. But I can only imagine what would have happened had we, listened to this back when it came out. We don't need to dwell on it too much since, again, it was like 2 weeks ago we reviewed it. But they wrote a straight-up metal album that is not so much throwback. It's not going into progressive this or doom that or whatever. It's just a fucking metal album. And they wrote really catchy songs with excellent riffs and a vocal delivery that could have easily gone to a power metal range but didn't, and stayed somewhere comfortable for our ears and his performance. And it's just excellent.
Yeah, this is an album that practices restraint. You know, it could have at so many times pushed into a power metal era, or it could have leaned really hard into the throwback sound, because it's right there on the fringes at all times. But it's the restraint and the balance that really, really works for this. This is what you and I would want every throwback-inspired band to do, is exactly that. Be inspired and pay homage to the bands that you love from years gone by, but not directly be those bands. That said, there are a few riffs on here that are like very much so of other bands of other eras, but they're delivered in a new light, in a new context, and it walks that line better than any other band of this genre has managed to do. And it is super memorable. It was instantly catchy. It was something I was like, damn, we should have reviewed this a long time ago and not waited for your end list for everybody. It ended up on my most improved list for obvious reasons. And it just owns. It's really, really good. And I already know I'm going to be listening to it a whole bunch more. It's just super duper solid, and it's what I want from all bands of this genre to be.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. So, for those of you who haven't heard it yet, check out the song Born Into Fire by Spirit Adrift off our number two album, Divided by Darkness.
right, this is where we would normally do a drum roll and hype number one, but we're going to make you wait just a minute before we get there. And that is because we did a thing that we begrudgingly did. Because everybody else was doing it, and we decided to hop on that bandwagon. You guys know how much we hate doing these year-end lists. So just to make our lives extra difficult, because we'd seen it done a few other places, we did a Sideshow Podcast Best of the Decade list. We're not going to go through that right now, because it's long and it would be tedious. And you've already listened to our 25 from this year. You don't need us to go through that whole thing right now, too. But it's going to be a separate post over on the website, probably going up right around the same time or exactly at the same time as this episode goes up. So feel free to bop over onto the sideshowpodcast.com and find our Best of the Decade list there. The rules for doing that one, because we both have our personal bests that are different as well, we took our top three albums from the last decade. We had to make up our 2010s. So we had to go through and pick those up because this show didn't exist in 2010. So we made our 2010 top three each. Then we pulled the top three from each year, giving us 30 albums. And the rule was no repeat bands. So, you know, as we mentioned, I always have Norma Jean show up on a year-end list. We didn't allow Norma Jean to show up three times to pick with. We had to pick one of those albums and pare down the list a little bit that way. And then, much like we do for this ranking, we each ranked them in order separately and combined them for one master list. So that were the was the parameters for that. That conglomeration list is now over on the website. You can check that out. Let us know what you think about it. As I said, it reflects the history of the show given the context of the time.
Right.
If we were to both go through and make our own personal lists, which I have done separately that I probably won't share through the sideshow, it doesn't quite overlap with that exactly. There is a lot that overlaps, but certainly not all of it.
Yeah.
So that's that. Head over to the site. Check it out. Let us know what you think. If you feel like taking on that task as well and doing your top albums of the last decade, I would love to read it. But there's a lot of albums. It's a chore. So I don't actually expect anyone to do that. Okay. Last album, number one pick, another one that we did not see coming, is Infant Annihilator with the Battle of Yaldabaoth. I probably butchered how that's pronounced, but it doesn't
really matter. We've butchered it like four times now, so.
Yeah. This was my number one. This was your number three that you originally had tied for number two with Cattle to Cat before you had to
pick, yeah,
shuffle and pick one. This is what I wanted from Cattle Decapitation, which is why I ended up at my number one. This is extreme tech death played at breakneck speeds with an extremely varied vocal performance and delivery. He never gets quite into that interesting clean thing that you get from Cattle to Cat, but it has that kind of just same huge, broad delivery that can seemingly do anything. But what this had that I found Cattle to Cap didn't was guitar riffage in spades. From sweepy, noodly, tappy shit to just straight up heavy, simple chug riffs. And everything in between. There is nothing that you can't find on this album. It delivers everything and does it in spades and is so over the top and so technically proficient that, I mean, half a spin in, I was like, this is going to be my top five list, no doubt about it. And it just, it continued to grow on me the more I listened to it. Everything about this album is praiseworthy and easy to gush about because it is flawless. For a band that I'd never even heard of before going into this, this is not their first release. I was just unaware. This grabbed, like, it just grabbed me by the ears and shoved me into it. Like, hey, pay attention. This is something to pay attention to. This is worthy of your time. It's incredible.
Yeah. What you said. I mean, this is just the most intense thing. I mean, you talked about the intensity of Gamora and such, but, like, I don't have a great explanation as to why I gave Cattle to Cap the edge over Infant Annihilator. I would argue songwriting finesse, but, like, again, it was a real coin toss. I mean, this album is just absolutely savage. and having sampled some of their previous stuff, it is a huge like step for them and their writing. And you don't expect something this mature from a band called Infant Annihilator. I mean, and the album artwork, I gotta say, coupled with the band name, intrigued me because, again, nothing you'd expect to see coupled together. But god damn it, is this just? I mean, the vocals are Travis Ryan-esque. I mean, he's emulating him. It's sometimes creepily so that I swear Travis is on there. The sheer brutality, the speed, some of the little technical doodles they do, and just the weight of it is goddamn impressive. And while it was surprising that a band we had no experience with previously jumped to our number one in the list, it is not surprising to me at all. After having reviewed it on the show, it's a feat. And I you know, maybe it's because they're unsigned or whatever. I am surprised this didn't end up on, I don't think, any other list I've looked at. Not that I've looked at a shit ton, but.
But we've looked at a fair amount. I didn't see it anywhere. Like this was a surprise in all ways, in it being an unsigned band that I had never heard of before, with a kind of not great band name, artwork that absolutely didn't fit. And as soon as you hit play, it's just like the most intense thing you've ever heard. And I was, you know, I kind of thought it was going to be a novelty thing. And I wasn't really going to get it. I mean, the first song is called Child Chewer. Like, I was kind of like, all right, well, this won't be my jam, but we'll cover it. And then by the second song, I was like, okay, I'm wrong. There's something really, really interesting here. And it just, like, the different dichotomies of album artwork versus band name versus what's on there versus production that you get from it was just so interesting and different that it grabbed my attention immediately. And I wasn't sure if once that kind of all settled and you could sort of just get used to all of that, if it was still going to be as interesting and as good. And I will say the more I've listened to it over the last month or so, the better it has gotten with each release, because there's so much going on that it takes a number of listens to really digest it and kind of latch onto it.
Yeah.
And this was an incredible album. This was easily my number one and our cumulative number one. It's fantastic. I have nothing else to say about it. It's great, and you should be listening to
Absolutely.
It.
Okay. That's it. That's it for the year. We're done.
We're out.
In 2020, we're going to, you know, keep doing the show with the every other week thing and three albums and a segment of some sort. We still haven't decided what we're doing. It might be really gimmicky. It might just be Bandcamp picks. Who knows? You'll have to keep listening to find out. So thanks for listening this year, and we hope you look forward to us next year as we look forward to keep doing this. Happy New Year, and you're going to end this year with some Infant Annihilator. So enjoy the song Plague Bearer, and we'll see you in 2020.
Knights of the King's Fist, ravaging the land of worthless goods, lurking in the midst of fun. I'm a sucker, I'm